from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. That's the band Missing Persons on L.A., a city that generates strong opinions. To Albert Einstein, it was like a paradise. He said it's, quote, always sunshine and clean air, gardens with palms and pepper trees, and friendly people who smile at one and ask for autographs. Not so for Truman Capote, who said, quote, it's redundant to die in Los Angeles. Author David Kippen has been collecting four centuries of thoughts on the city found in letters and diaries, and they're contained in his new book, Dear Los Angeles. He'll join us, and we want to hear from you. What's your take on L.A.? That's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Los Angeles, it's many things to many people. To W.H. Auden, the city was the great wrong place. To Einstein, like a paradise. Eleanor Roosevelt rhapsodized from an airplane, quote, the city lies below you like a multicolored heap of jewels. There is natural beauty and there is natural disaster. G. McGrama, on the day of the 1934 New Year's flood, wrote, many killed and injured and many homes washed away, rained all day, stayed home and quilted. L.A. Times critic at large, David Kippen, collected centuries of reflections on the city in his new book, Dear Los Angeles, The City in Diaries and Letters, 1542 to 2018. And welcome back to Forum, David Kippen.
Oh, Michael, it's such a thrill to be back here with you.
Delighted to have you. And for those of you who don't know, David Kippen was also for a number of years, how many years, book editor of the San Francisco Chronicle?
7 years.
7 years. And now I wouldn't call it a business because it's a nonprofit, but it is kind of a business. Libro Schmibros, he's got a lending library actually down in Los Angeles, and it's always a pleasure to have him here.
It's monkey business. It's the next best thing LA has to City Lights.
Monkey business, okay. let's talk about this book of yours, though, because it's a treasure trove and there's so much in it. And Teresa Carpenter, who wrote a book about New York diaries, was kind of really the template for you, wasn't it?
Yes. I can't pretend the idea is completely mine. She wrote a book called New York Diaries. It did nicely, and I thought, well, if you can get a 500-page collection of good material out of New York, I mean, imagine how well you'd do with a real city. And
is L.A. a real city?
Oh, L.A. is the realest of real cities.
See all this stuff about how plastic it is and how, I mean, many of the quotes in your book, all that sort of stuff.
They are indeed. I mean, you can't hope to capture or any kind of even blurry picture of Los Angeles without incorporating the kinds of scurrilous things that out-of-towners have said about the place when they drop in. But natives sometimes have a different perspective.
We may hear some of that scurrilousness. We may also hear some chauvinism and praise and delight about Los Angeles, because there's been this ongoing, I guess call it rivalry, ambivalence between L.A. and San Francisco that has gone on all these years since I've been in the Bay Area. But I found fascinating this book in the sense that it enmeshes so much history. I mean, you go back to, well, as the subtitle says, you go back to the 16th century, and you have so much history embedded in here. It's really remarkable.
It's always fascinating me to counterpoint L.A. history or even California history with what was going on in the rest of the world. I mean, as long as we're here in San Francisco, it's always blown my mind that the city was founded the same month as July 4th, 1776, when the country was founded.
And I want to give some examples of what we find in your book. I was saying to Judy Campbell, our producer, that even though you find out about, let's say, a priest who, in 1776, the year of the American Revolution, sees Indians and describes those Indians, and then you get all these descriptions of Los Angeles when it wasn't even the metropolis by anybody's imagination that it has become. And then you have somebody like Ryan Reynolds, I found this hysterical, who said they hate gluten so much in L.A. you could hold up a gas station with a bagel.
Isn't that a great line? I mean, I hope he writes his own stuff, and if he's got a ghostwriter, I don't want to know about it.
Well, nobody here has a ghostwriter, but you have a lot of writers. And being a literary guy, it's understandable that you have a lot of writers. This is, by the way, I want to make sure listeners understand, a collection of quotes from letters and diaries of inhabitants in the city as well as those who pass through. And there's so much here. You go month by month and you go not necessarily year by year, but you find yourself in different times and different places and parts of L.A. And We were talking a little bit about Thomas Pynchon. We've had conversations in the past about Thomas Pynchon before we went on the air, but he said, where else do you find addresses that go into the hundreds of thousands?
Oh, that one was actually Jean Renoir. Pynchon has a different quote, which I won't, because I revere him so much, even try to paraphrase. But yeah, that was one I found in his papers, not his complete papers, heaven knows, but what scraps are available at the Huntington Library in Southern California. And I thought, Pynchon of all people, and something that nobody's ever seen before, though it's not particularly revealing, it's wonderful. And I was thrilled to put it in the book.
Yeah, see, there are things conflating in my mind between things I know about writers like Pynchon and the things that appear in the book by Pynchon from diaries or letters. We don't get much from Pynchon because we never see him. We never hear him talk. But, you know, you've got probably another book here with respect to, you think about Nathaniel West and Pynchon and all these writers. We did a whole program a number of years ago on L.A. writers, did he? And,
I remember who lived that there, with of course. You. Yeah. That was great fun. And, yeah, I mean, I do not pretend that L.A. Diaries and Letters, Dear Los Angeles, is the only book possible of ephemeral writing about my hometown. I would love for, you know, a thousand flowers to bloom and everybody to come after me with quotes that they love. I even foolishly, against my and everybody around me's better judgment, put my email address in the book for that purpose.
Are we getting a lot of feedback?
Not nearly as much as I might have wished. Nothing would make me happier than to have, I don't know, fugitive Angelinos within the sound of our voices send in their own stuff and one up my own neighbors.
Well, we will hear, no doubt, from some fugitive Angelinos as well as people who appreciate and love Los Angeles. There's really so much that one can tackle here and learn. You don't even have to necessarily love or hate Los Angeles because, as I said, there's so much history here. Writers especially come to the fore here. And a couple of interesting things that I want to highlight with you. I mean, we have Fitzgerald talking about his experience in Hollywood. We have Faulkner talking about his experience in Hollywood. We have Dreiser talking about maybe more about his sex life than you would want to know.
Oh, my God. Theodore Dreiser was a horn dog. Who would have thought?
And you learn things about people here as well as the history of Los Angeles and the history of so much else. I want to give a few examples, if I could. Just in the beginning, in the first month of January, there were things that really caught my attention. I like this from somebody who was talking about, well, actually, I'll have you explain it, David. He was eating mutton and complaining about the mutton. You remember that one?
Dimly, yeah. I mean, I love some of the older diaries from people nobody but historians have heard of, if that. I mean, I solicited stuff from people who aren't famous at all and found some. But yeah, I mean, in the 18th century, people were getting more or less their first good looks, aside from the Native Americans, at Southern California. And they were eating mutton and packing pistols until the city of Los Angeles outlawed them. L.A. had gun control in the 18th century. And, you know, that, among many other things, I think is something that we could maybe take a second look at.
Well, there are many things to take a second and a third and a fourth look at. But, boy, if you want, especially Hollywood, you know, there's so much here. Billy Wilder describing Monty Cliff, no less, as a pimply lad. he looked like a pimply messenger boy. I mean, all these little sort of nuances of Los Angeles and the whole world of it, not only Hollywood, but a city that people love to hate.
I love moments like that where you've got two people's account of the same meeting. Christopher Isherwood, who started out hating it, although he found an apartment in an hour, he says, you know, had an hour free after we landed. So I found an apartment. Try that in Los Angeles nowadays. But you've got an account of, I think, him at lunch with Tennessee Williams and then vice versa. Tennessee Williams' account of dining with Christopher Isherwood, which is glorious. Williams never quite got over his dislike of the place, but I discovered, and I, you know, mentioned in my acknowledgments or no, my about the author section at the back, that he was working steadily on what became the Glass Menagerie in Southern California.
And a fascinating fact in itself. You mentioned Isherwood. There's a little gem in here among so many gems of Isherwood saying that William Burroughs came to visit him and brought. How many people? We brought four people. He said, I didn't know he carried. He traveled with a mob.
Oh, my favorite from Isherwood, among so many. I mean, he and Anais Nin are some of the great, best diarists L.A. ever had, is that moment I couldn't help dog-earing right after John F. Kennedy dies. And he says, in this quite largely anti-Kennedy town, which has so little to unite it, it was amazing how much everybody minded. People just sat listening to the radio in their cars and sobbing. We were all in love with him without knowing it. I get chills even now just seeing that.
I can hear
this book through all kinds
voice.
Of galleys and proofs and editions.
You even have a suicide note in here in that early January of a mayor.
I do. The Los Angeles mayors are kind of a story in themselves. One of them resigned the mayoralty just long enough to join a lynch mob, and when he'd taken care of that, resumed his post. And yeah, Mayor Marchesau wrote a suicide note addressed to his wife, very poignant. He'd been implicated in some sort of hugger-mugger, and shot himself in the council chair. I don't mean to laugh about it. I hope his descendants get in touch. They probably got some diaries of their own to spare.
We also mentioned Dreiser, and Dreiser writes a letter to Steinbeck, and that's sort of a fascinating anecdote. Tell the story.
Oh, yeah. There's that moment where I think they're at dinner at some event at the Ambassador Hotel, or I guess the Coconut Grove, which is the nightclub adjacent, was adjacent. Now it's Robert F. Kennedy High School because he was killed there. They don't recognize each other. And Dreiser writes back very apologetically later on for not having recognized a man that he revered. And speaking of RFK, speaking on the radio of RFK, there's a great letter from America, which was the name of Alistair Cook's great BBC show, about having been there, having been in the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel, and his shock and the shock of everyone around him, and just what a wrench he felt it to be immediately for the country and history. Oh, wild stuff.
Yeah, like I said, you have all these historical moments of sadness and of greatness and people responding to it, people of all colors. Here's Alexander Wolcott, 1940, saying, "The part of California, this part of California," speaking about L.A., mm-hmm. "seems to me completely loathsome, but I like San Francisco."
Yes. Oh, yeah. Foolishly, I took your wonderful producer's advice and turned off my phone, but I photographed several pages after searching my Word doc of the book of mentions of San Francisco, and many of them, like Wolcott's, are glowing at the expense of the city in which they were written.
There's also, it's interesting how things dovetail in some ways. I remember a quote of Bellows about how Los Angeles was like you took the whole of the United States and tipped it and all the loose objects wound up there. And there are quotes along those lines here, not from Bellow, but in other words, quotes that dovetail things that actually have been said. Like I think Capote said something about to die in L.A. would be redundant.
Yes. Certainly dyspepsia is not in short supply. There's a great moment from James Thurber where he says the newspapers say it's 104 here, but Angelenos feel no discomfort. No discomfort? I hope the sons of bitches burn up.
What's the ultimate guy? Is there a composite picture you get of L.A. in any respect through all this research you've done, all these diaries you've read and epistolary work and so forth?
I think Los Angeles, not by itself, but I think it's fair to say that Los Angeles defies any kind of grand summation. But I did get off a line in the preface, which I hope you'll indulge me for reading just a single sentence of, because this is a book mostly of other people's language. And you and I are writers. We have ego. So, yeah, just apropos of that, there's a moment where I say L.A. is a mountain lion we only glimpse in shutter quick flashes. A strong diary entry or letter makes as good a tripwire as any. Serves me right for fumbling the line. But, yeah, we have these.
It's a good line, though, David.
Well, thank you, Michael. Coming from you and having just heard you quote your beloved Saul Bellow, that means more to me than you can know.
Dorothy Parker said 72 suburbs in search of a city. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad. And she's in here, too, talking about what a treat it was to meet Marilyn Monroe the night Marilyn Monroe, in her own letter to her nephew, danced with RFK for the first time. RFK starts to seem like kind of a motif in here.
And what are the other motifs that rise? I mean, there's also, unless we neglected, a lot about the beauty of Los Angeles, a lot about nature. You got John Muir in here. You've got some lovely writing by Nias Nin and Eleanor Coppola about Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody, of course, and rightly so, identifies John Muir with the Sierra. And Hetch Hetchy and the campaign to save it. Last night I went out to Pacino, and the waitress brought me what was called on the menu Hetch Hetchy water. And I took a moment of silence remembering John Muir's doomed campaign for it. But he used to go down and visit friends in Pasadena, and he was rhapsodizing about the Be Loud Glades, as Yeats would call them, in the foothills there. Los Angeles remains a city built across a mountain range, though people who don't go to the valley don't often realize it. And even now, I find it an easy place to rhapsodize about for all the blood and mishigas it has on its hands.
Some of the lines of Hollywood, I mean, I remember a line of Oscar Levant's that came to mind in reading your book, under the tinsel, there's more tinsel. I always thought of that line. But then you've got lines of people like Groucho Marx saying, Hollywood, do you remember the line?
I'm hazy on it because there's so many great Groucho
Marx. I didn't have
Marx
it marked
lines.
In my book, but it was a line. Well, the brides, I think he said, keep the bouquet and they throw away the groom. And
yeah, now this is not, I hasten to stipulate, a book of great quotations about Los Angeles. Luckily, I'd like to think it doubles as that too, but you could certainly edit a whole different book of writing and pithy writing that's not from diaries or letters in which people say the most wonderful and demonically dyspeptic things about the city. But that's one for another day.
Well, a favorite, I must say, is Mencken's. He says, if L.A. is not the rectum of civilization, then I am not an anatomist. Well, Mencken was sort of an anatomist, but not literally an anatomist.
And that was one of the joys of putting it together, because I got in touch with the Enoch Pratt Free Library of Baltimore, to which Mencken had willed the rights to all of his work.
Let me give the number out and want to hear from listeners things that you think about L.A. or when you can maybe complete the sentence that we're going to throw to you. When asked our followers on social media to complete this sentence, Los Angeles is, we got some responses and you may want to add yours. Gabriella says, Los Angeles is a hellhole where my father grew up. Johnny says, Los Angeles is overrated. And Rick writes,
not in San Francisco, it's not.
Rick writes, Los Angeles is all about Will Rogers State Beach. Actually, it's one of the introductions I had to Los Angeles when I first came there was Will Rogers State Beach, and memorable.
You could do worse.
You could do a lot worse. Let me invite our callers to join us. Thoughts about L.A. or when you ask the question on social media, complete the sentence, Los Angeles is, what's your response? Toll-free number is available, and you can join us now at that number, 866-733-6786. Join us now, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post anything you have to say about Los Angeles there at kqed.org/forum. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. We're talking to David Kippen about the city of Los Angeles and his book, Dear Los Angeles, The City in Diaries and Letters, 1542 to 2018. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask you some thoughts as the former book editor of the Chronicle about John McMurtry being removed, I believe, from his position. Oscar Villalón, who was on with us just yesterday, followed you, and John followed Oscar. And there's some real concern out here in the book-loving community, literary community, because there's talk. I don't know exactly where it's going to lead. You remember, we had a fight about this years ago. They wanted to take that separate section out and Forum, I say with some pride, you know, stepped up to the plate on that one. I'm not sure what we can do or what we need to do now, but we're seeing book reviews kind of disappearing and in many ways being diminished all over the country.
It's a sin. It's a shanda. And I have long believed that book sections and book coverage are the indicator species of a healthy literary ecosystem. And, you know, to see a great city like San Francisco and a great region like the Bay Area lose its book pages and lose a terrific editor like John is, I think, unforgivable. And I hope if enough of an outcry is raised, as you, for which you earn my undying thanks, raised when they tried to kill it years ago, that it could be reinstated. I will never forget Phil Bronstein writing in a box at the lower right-hand corner of the front page of the Chronicle when the book review returned, okay, we blew it. I think they've blown it again, and I hope that they will realize their mistake again.
You see, I mean, as a literary guy and a culture critic, and you see a bigger issue here? I mean, people are looking at their devices more. They're not necessarily reading as much, and reading is not necessarily valued as much. Is that too easy of an axiom?
Well, they're separate problems. People are reading newspapers on their devices, and newspapers have more readers because of it, arguably, than ever before. I think no fewer. But yeah, I teach writing at UCLA, and my students are brilliant. But there is, I would be Pollyanna to deny, I think, an increasing gravitation toward image at the expense of language. And if only in Boyle Heights, though, the sort of working class neighborhood where Libro Schmibros is located, the young people I see there, the entire families, you can't meet them and put books into people's hands without feeling some hope.
David Kippen with us, editor of a new anthology, Dear Los Angeles, The City in Diaries and Letters, 1542 to 2018, and founder of Libro Schmibros, Lending Library, critic at large for the LA Times. And he'll be at Book Passage in San Francisco tonight at 6 p.m. And let's get some callers aboard here. And we'll hear first from Ernesto. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, Ernesto, go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm actually a Los Angeles native, and I live here in San Francisco, and I was just telling my husband, whenever I hear about people talking about L.A., it's always negative, and I'm just like, what did I say to you?
You're absolutely entitled to that reaction. One of the things I keep finding, and I may well find it again at Book Passage when I go around talking about this book, is people are so eager to share their own memories of the place, especially people a little older. It's almost as if a childhood in Los Angeles is something that they're afraid they dreamt, and they want to compare notes to make sure that it actually happened. It's a lovely city, always has been, with its, you know, million caveats.
So what do you think, Ernesto? You miss L.A.?
Oh, yeah, well, the first day I arrived in San Francisco, it was really funny. We were in line for a club, and everybody was just, you're from L.A., and oh, my God, that's horrible over there. And then I stopped, and I was like, I didn't even say anything about San Francisco. So I think it just was really funny.
Well, thank you for joining us. There always has been. I observed this before, and I've observed this through the years, a lot of snobbery in San Francisco about L.A., but now San Francisco's changed so much. It's become, you know, a lot of techies and a lot of millennials, and it's gone. And a lot of the people who used to be artists who were coming to San Francisco are going to L.A. now. It's easier to live there. It's less expensive.
Absolutely. I gather people, many of them were priced out of the Mission and wound up in Echo Park, just west of downtown Los Angeles. And now, of course, they're being priced out of Echo Park, and some of them are coming to Boyle Heights, which is kind of a fraught situation. But yeah, I mean, I've written for years, including in the Chronicle, which I probably shouldn't say a word against for fear that they will pull the plug on my 800 old clips that I return to embarrassingly frequently online. But I think the rivalry between Northern and Southern California is a canard, just like the rivalry between the West Side and the East Side in Los Angeles itself. And if the two cities, both of which I adore, would ever make common cause, we would put New York in the shade overnight.
Well, listen to these. Nora says, Los Angeles is home to the wonderful Getty Museum. Another listener tweets, I love L.A. So much more to do there than anywhere else in the world. I live in Sausalito. It's so boring. And Annie says, Los Angeles is a way cooler place than I was led to believe when I was a kid in the Bay Area. We'll hear from some more of you when we return. David Kippen with us. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about Los Angeles, love it or hate it. There are probably many Los Angeleses when you really look in, with some scrutiny at it. David Kippen is here. The City of Los Angeles is the center of his book, Dear Los Angeles, The City in Diaries and Letters, 1542 to 2018. And we're going to hear from you, our listeners, and want to remind you that you can let us know your thoughts about L.A. Simply ask, what is your take on L.A.? I know that's a big question, but lots of calls are coming in. We'll get to as many of you as we can. But David and I were talking a little bit off mic about jokes about L.A. because, as some of you know, I'm a bit of a joke aficionado, and so is he, it turns out. he did an interview with me and Bobby Slayton in Los Angeles a while back when my book about Jewish humor came out. But you were talking about a book that you really want to recommend to people, which I think is important for them to know about.
Absolutely. There's a book by John Winokur, who's a L.A. Pacific Palisades-based editor of The Portable Curmudgeon, and a lot of these sort of crestomathies of you know, witty remarks on all kinds of subjects, tips for writers. And he had a book years ago, I hope it's still in print, called The War Between the State. It's all quotations about L.A., about San Francisco, about the mutual misunderstandings between them, about California. And yeah, in one or two cases, I thanked him then and I thank him now for a couple of discreet pilferings that found their way into my book.
And there are jokes in that book?
I don't remember if there were, you know, bada-bing rimshot jokes, but there's laughs on every page, as I hope there are in mine.
There are a good number of laughs in yours, to be sure. Here's Sam, who says, tell your guests the house Isherwood would found to rent in an hour was also lived in by Beck and is now for sale for about $4 million.
And a bargain at twice the price.
And here are some callers. Ron joins us. Ron, you're on.
Good morning. So what strikes me about L.A. is sort of it cuts two ways. It's, you know, it's not surprised that it's a city built on artifice because it is, after all, the movie capital of the world. But there's sort of two views of it. One of them, I think, is Nathaniel West in Day of the Locust and his comments about the architecture, which are trenchant. And then the other side, which is kind of a celebration, as in Steve Martin's L.A. story. It's the artificiality of L.A. that makes it horrifying and charming, and it depends on which side of the bed you wake up on that day, at least in my experience.
That's well said, Ron. Thank you for that. Want to say anything about that, Dan?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think back to Steve Martin, who I had the thrill of interviewing for, sadly, the late Sidney Goldstein years ago up here. And he has, I wasn't able to include it in the book because it's a short story, but I commend it to anybody. I think it's in The Cruel Shoes, which is that anthology of his short fiction. And it is the definitive piece about what we call parachute journalism. It's a parody of a journalistic story from some magazine about somebody who spends a weekend at the Chateau Marmont and thinks he's writing definitively about Los Angeles. It's hysterically funny, as well it should be, because Steve Martin is a son of, well, Orange County, if not Los Angeles.
And he mentions the Day of the Locusts. Nathaniel West keeps talking in that book about the people who come to California to die, and I think
yes.
He really means L.A., doesn't he?
Oh, he definitely does. He means people with sort of dull, hollow eyes on Hollywood Boulevard who think they're going to be stars, and they wind up with, I think he says, is a bag of oranges. The dyspepsia isn't just one-liners. There are, of course, some horrific novels about the place, some very apocalyptic novels. I would recommend Mike Davis's book, Ecology of Fear, which is Los Angeles and the Imagination of Disaster, which is a line he filched from Susan Sontag about the inescapable trope of Los Angeles up in flames or down into the ocean or riven by an earthquake. It's something about the place that invites calamity.
Scott writes, Los Angeles is a Ross McDonald novel. Oh, you could say it's a Raymond Chandler novel, or you can go on and on. Yeah.
Well, Ross McDonald certainly revered Raymond Chandler, just as Raymond Chandler, I freely admit, revered and in some cases emulated Dashiell Hammett writing about San Francisco. I'm terrifically proud that my home state is the birthplace of the twin fathers of the Private Eye novel. And in Ross McDonald, I think they're weird and wonderful uncle.
Here's Jerry, who sends in a Don Blanding poem, Flotsam, Jetsam, Hollywood Gets Them. I was surprised, not so surprised to see an anti-Semitic poem by E.E. Cummings in your anthology, and also maybe more surprised to see anti-Semitism from Ayn Rand, who happened to have been Jewish.
Yes, there's
not that there aren't anti-Semitic Jews.
Right? No, but Norman Mailer in a letter home calls her on it. I grew up Jewish in Los Angeles and have never really felt the sting of anything untoward. But yeah, Los Angeles for a long time was staunchly Protestant in a way that San Francisco, as Kevin Starr, this late great California historian, called San Francisco, principally Catholic. Of course, all these places have evolved well beyond that, and Los Angeles has 88 languages and probably more denominations.
And we'll have more calls. Let me go next to Michael. Michael, join us.
Good morning. I enjoy talking about something local instead of Washington, D.C., and thanks for playing the Doors. That was a shot. The corrupt side of L.A., like the Zoot Suit Wars and Mr. Mulholland going to Bishop, and he stole the water, but he stole it fair and square.
That's good. That's a great line. I can't tell you how thrilled I am to hear a San Franciscan talking about Los Angeles book as local.
Thank you, Michael. And here's a comment from another Michael, I guess. Born and raised in the Bay Area, I moved to L.A. in 1977 to get into the film industry. 40 years and a full career in Hollywood later, I moved back to the Bay Area in retirement. There's much to love about L.A. Musso and Frank's, Lucy's, El Adobe, the beaches and the museums, but there are so many people living there that actually going to and from these delights is all but unbearable. The same, unfortunately, is true now of San Francisco.
I'm dismayed to hear you say that, but I can't say I completely find what you say unrecognizable. The silver lining is to hear you mention Musso and Frank, the great restaurant on Hollywood Boulevard celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. Shamelessly, I'll mention I just wrote a piece about the 100th anniversary of Musso's for, I don't know if you've seen Alta Magazine, it's Will Hurst's new quarterly about California.
I've not seen a copy
and the
yet,
West. No. Oh, chase it down. They're really doing wonderful things there. I'm doing another piece for them. And they published my Musso's article, which came out as fiction. How about that?
How about that? How about another caller? Daniel joins us. Daniel, join us.
Yeah, hi. I'm from Oakland, originally from Los Angeles. I've been living here for about 10 years. And I am actually headed to Iowa to complete my graduate schooling. And I find myself often nostalgic for home. And I'm able to sort of comfort myself by diving deep into my record bin and pulling out Tom Waits' Night Talks at the Diner, which is a great album where he sort of travels through downtown Los Angeles and Hollywood during the late 70s, early 80s, talking about, you know, frightening Patti Melt's The Norm.
Mm-hmm.
Stars, and it's a really wonderful album that that takes me home. Even though I'm a younger person, I still get sort of a comforting feeling for home.
Well, you should hear Randy Newman sing "I Love L.A." That will brighten your spirits too. What are you studying at Iowa, Daniel?
I'll be going to a consort, the University and the VA in Iowa City, to complete a neuropsychology PhD.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you for giving a call to the Forum program this morning. Good to hear from you. We'll hear from some more of you. We'll go to another Oakland caller. That's you, Sean. Morning.
Yeah, good morning. Great topic. Great show. I grew up in Southern California, but I lived in the Bay Area for probably almost 30 years now, and I'm in the food and wine industry, and L.A. is on fire like I have never seen in about the last decade. There's just so much going on there. In every neighborhood, whether it's Echo Park, Los Feliz, Culver City, downtown is almost unrecognizable for what's going on down there. It's just fantastic. And the other thing I'd like to say is the writer Joan Didion, I loved some of her stuff on L.A., and one thing that always stuck with me, I won't be able to quote it exactly, but she said that, you know, a lot of people move west to make it, you know, and whether it was in Hollywood or various industries out west, but it was sort of like the edge of the world if you didn't make it, you know, like there was nowhere else to go from there. I thought that was fascinating. One last thing, since you brought up Chateau Marmont, a good friend of mine was the bar manager there for many, many years, very famed place. And it was around the time that the Sunset Towers was a little bit west, was being rejuvenated, and that was the new trendy place. And I asked him, hey, you guys got some rival there? And he said, ah, no big deal. No one dies there. So I thought that was funny.
I think Joan Didion would be very amused to hear you say Los Angeles is on fire after having written so well about the Santa Ana winds.
And remember, Joan Didion actually came from the Sacramento area.
She did indeed. She and Thomas Pynchon are about the only two writers I can think of who to have written well about both Northern and Southern California.
And where does James Ellroy fit into this? This is part of our whole literary discussion, but where for you?
I have never been James Ellroy's biggest fan.
Likewise.
If you ever have an opportunity to go see him, he is the best stand-up comedian you would ever want to hear. I heard him interviewed by Joseph Wamba, the great former L.A. cop and writer of fiction and nonfiction. And he brought the house down at the L.A. Times Book Festival, which, by the way, I'm going to be visiting if anybody's in Southern California in the middle of April. And congratulations, Bay Area and Sherrilyn Parsons, for finally getting a decent festival of your own back.
And let me read some comments. This is almost a classic comment from T, who says, Los Angeles is the dude from the Big Lebowski.
Well,
there's one to chew on. Huh?
I would be the last person to deny it. Jeff Bridges, as a native Southern Californian descended from Lloyd Bridges of San Leandro, is Californian to his fingertips and huarachied toes.
Here's Pam, who writes, I'm so happy to have lived in L.A. before moving to San Francisco. Otherwise, I would never have known its wonders, the Santa Monica Farmers Market, Japanese American National Museum, LACMA, etc. And Adriana says, my mom grew up in L.A. and has taken me to Philippe for French dips since birth. Olvera Street tacos and pan dulces taught me to embrace my Chicana roots, and I can say that I hate it less and less every time I visit.
I'm just thrilled to hear people mentioning the old places. I don't want to sound like a fuddy-duddy, but yes, L.A. is on fire, and yet there are still smoldering, wonderful traces of its past.
And here's another caller. Michelle, you're on. Good morning.
I'm a Colorado native who went to live in L.A. for 4 years, and boy, I ended up loving it. I couldn't believe that. People were shocked that we were moving there, but I found it friendly and exotic, and even though there was a lot of crime, I think I didn't feel unsafe most of the time. And it has the best weather of anywhere. But the thing is that it has bad water with that chromium 6 in it. It was boring. I mean, we watched more TV in Santa Monica because it was a 3-hour to 4-hour round trip to go to a show in Hollywood or somewhere going more inward from Santa Monica just to get there. It was a 3 or 4 hour round trip. But we loved the Disney Hall. That was the most beautiful thing.
Well, you know, you can take the subway now to Disney Hall from Santa Monica.
Amazing. Maybe I'll move back there.
You'd be welcome.
Thank you, Michelle. Colorado native. And you know what used to be ridiculed and disparaged the most about L.A. in my early years living in the Bay Area? There was really a snobbery, I think. It's faced easy to use that word, but I think it really was real.
Not reciprocated, by the way.
No. Well, and then there was also that rivalry, you know, the Dodgers and the Giants and all the rest of it. But, you know, they used to talk about the traffic in L.A., and it has become almost as bad here. But they talk a lot about the smog. And the materialism and the shallowness. And, you know, you heard that stuff when you were here, when you were located here about
LA. Oh, sure. And, you know, I'm not such a booster as to think there isn't a grain of truth to a lot of that. The air quality has been improving ever since the advent of the catalytic converter. And only in the last year or two has it started to get even infinitesimally worse again. So the air quality management district has something to answer for. Yeah, I mean, all the stereotypes didn't come out of nowhere, but I think they could do with a second look, most of them.
Talking to David Kippen about the city of Los Angeles and his book, Dear Los Angeles, The City of Diaries and Letters, 1542 to 2018. And find out more about what your take is on L.A. We go next to another Oakland caller, Noella. Good morning.
Hi, I'm Noella from Oakland. I just want to share my experience about living in L.A. I grew up here in the Bay Area, but I took a trip into Florida and lived there for a few years in my early 20s. And then I moved into L.A. for about 6 months. I was involved in the DIY punk scene in Florida. And then when I moved to L.A., I tried to get involved in that. I lived in West Hollywood. And I found that it was really hard to make friends and meet people because I spent a lot of time in my car, and I just found it to be a really lonely place. And when I came back to the Bay Area, I was spending a lot of time on public transportation, and I found it was just really nice to be around a lot of people. So So I just found the Bay Area to be just so much more of a welcoming place. And I just really, I've been back here for 20 years, and I just really love it here. And I just love being out and about amongst people. And I just think that the Bay Area is just so much more welcoming. And I think one of the reasons is that we just have so much more contact with people. Just, you know, with, like I said, the transit systems and people being out and about and not being stuck in our cars all the time.
Well, I'm the last person to deny how welcoming the Bay Area is, because I came here in, well, 20 years ago as an Angeleno and writing about books on Los Angeles by following my nose, probably more than my readers might have liked, and felt nothing but welcome. It's why I'm so glad to be here now.
And thank you for the call, Noella. Appreciate hearing from you. We're talking about 5,000 square miles, Los Angeles, and there's much diversity there and much pluralism and many ranges of, you go to a different neighborhood, it's like the Bay Area. You're in a different neighborhood, you're in a different world sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. It is a city of neighborhoods. People don't give it credit for that, but, I mean, if you ask most people where they're from, they won't say Los Angeles. They'll say Boyle Heights or Pacific Palisades, just like if you ask people where they're from, they won't say California. They're from Los Angeles or San Francisco, though I think maybe as a reaction against events beyond California, we're starting to develop a little California consciousness. I think years ago when I was a kid, you would not have seen all these T-shirts with the bear flag on them like you do now.
Well, San Franciscans do this. I live in Pack Heights. I live in the Sunset. I live in the Excelsior and so forth. But there's something that's very distinctive about L.A. that comes to my mind, and that is when you talk to people in Los Angeles, they'll say somebody famous lived here. I mean, you hear that a little bit in San Francisco, but not like L.A., and it's usually movie people who either lived there or lived on that block or rented there or whatever.
Well, I mean, I'm the obnoxious one who is fun to hear from your caller in Colorado, because, you know, you can make a case all the best Angelenos come from Colorado, and I will go to John Fonte's apartment, the great L.A. writer. I will go to Carrie McWilliams' house, the great California historian, both of them originally Colorados. But here in San Francisco, I'm staying with friends on a street where I'm told Willie Mays and Hewlett's mom of Hewlett Packard and Matthew Richtel of the New York Times and I forget who else, Jerry Roberts used to live. So I'm a sucker for that kind of thing anywhere. And in old fascinating cities like yours and mine, if you know where to look, that stuff is always ready to hand and delicious.
And let me correct something. I said 5,000 square miles. I meant 500,000.
In either event,
square miles.
It's a couple more than 49.
Yeah. But we're going to get more takes on L.A. from listeners. Here's Moose, a listener named Moose, who says, I moved to San Francisco from New York City, and San Francisco currently feels more like L.A. than L.A. does. No desire for anonymity and a look-at-me-I'm-rich mentality. Michael says, Ross McDonald had a great line about L.A. in one of his books, quote, there's nothing wrong with Southern California that a rise in sea level wouldn't cure. You remember Kurt Gentry's book, The Late Great State of California? He was talking about L.A. going underwater, and we just had a program on the rise of sea level, and SFO, by the end of the century, the airport could indeed be underwater, and things are moving that way unless we do some serious mitigation, but that's another program.
California falls into the sea. That was Donald Fagen and Steely Dan.
That's right. And more of your calls, a San Francisco caller. Barbara, good morning.
Oh, I grew up in San Diego. I gradually moved northward, Santa Barbara, and then San Diego, Santa Barbara, San Francisco. And I have very old memories, because obviously I'm not young anymore. I have images in my mind of what the old L.A. used to look like. And it had orange groves, and it had a lot of buildings with the mosaic tile tops. And later, when I went to Valencia, Spain, as an adult, I noticed the similarity between the very old L.A. and Valencia, Spain.
Well, it's no coincidence that Valencia should remind you of a city redolent of orange blossoms.
Exactly. And, oh, please talk about the Brown Derby restaurant in the shape of a hat.
Oh, yeah.
Can I just ask you quickly, though, Barbara, are you going to continue moving north or are you settled here?
Oh, I'm stuck here. This is my place. I love San Francisco.
The Brown Derby, David Kippen.
Ah, the Brown Derby, birthplace of the Cobb salad, or so they would have you believe, like Philippe's would have you believe it's the birthplace of the French dip sandwich.
No, Larry David said that he, some member of his family, it was a big argument with Richard Lewis, one of the Curb Your Enthusiasm, who actually invented the Cobb salad.
Well, I mean, all these inventions, all these quotations, you know, they've got any number of attributions. But alas, the Brown Derby is no longer with us, but it went away for a while and came back. So fingers crossed for a resurrection.
And Barbara, thank you for those memories. Good to hear from you this morning. We're going to hear from some more of you. We're going to Alexandra next up in Santa Rosa. Alexandra, welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm actually from Long Beach, down in L.A. It's kind of borderline L.A., but I loved it. You know, it was a great place to grow up. However, it was lacking in, like, nature. You have to drive 2-3 hours to get to any kind of open space or nature kind of anything. And moving up to the North Bay here, it's just like a whole other world. I love it so much. It's so green. There's animals. There's creeks. And you don't get any of that down in L.A. You know, like growing up as a kid, I felt kind of deprived from nature, honestly. So that's kind of my take on it.
Well, I'm interested in you mentioning Long Beach because I remember I was going to visit Billy Friedkin down in Los Angeles to drop a name. And I was in Long Beach for a wedding, and he said, Long Beach, why do you want to be in Long Beach? Why do you want to even breathe the air in Long Beach? Or, you know,
well, I lived in Long Beach for a good, happy year or so. And what are you talking about, no nature? There's three islands in the bay just off Belmont Shore. They're man-made, and there are oil wells on them, but still, islands just the same.
I suppose. We do have a nature center in Long Beach. It's totally man-made, and that was our only little speck of nature we had, but I loved it. It was one of my favorite places to go as a kid.
You just said we. Once an Angelino, always an Angelino.
And thank you, Alexandra. Here's Carlos, who says, I grew up at Venice Beach in the 70s, and then he has in capital letters, wow, with an exclamation mark. What a great time I had. JJ says, my childhood memories of growing up in L.A. during the late 40s and 50s are golden. I grew up reading Matt Weinstock and Paul Coates. I could roam the city on my bike at night, a preteen Joan Didion on two wheels, though George Hodel might have been cruising those same dark streets. I could go on for pages. But let's go on to some more of our callers. And we've got Suzanne next. Suzanne, join us. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Well, I've been living in the Bay Area for the past 50 years, but I have a grown son who's 30, who's now living in downtown L.A., and I have to say I totally agree that the image of L.A. needs to be revisited. When I used to go down there years ago to visit my in-laws, I hated the place. Hellhole was what usually occurred to me. Now when I go down and visit my son who lives in the downtown district, it's a vibrant, fascinating place. In some ways, it seems, you know, more interesting walking down the street than parts of I live in the city here in San Francisco. And so I really think the two cities may be sort of changing places in some ways.
I've long maintained the same thing. I mean, you know, Los Angeles forever was notorious as nouveau riche and, you know, not to malign my neighbors of this week, but I gather the same case could be made of the Bay Area. And then the Bay Area traditionally bohemian. If you hang out in downtown Los Angeles and other neighborhoods, you may not feel completely homesick.
No, when we talked yesterday about Lawrence Ferlinghetti, you know, he's coming up on the 100th birthday, there was all this talk about bohemianism being lost in San Francisco. Mm. And San Francisco, like I said earlier, there's been a kind of hegira of people going from San Francisco to L.A. who are artists who can't afford to live here.
The only thing that gets on my nerves is when San Franciscans and New Yorkers move to Los Angeles, as so many of them are. And yes, they do find it changed. They do find it delightful, but they think that's their doing. They think it was a hellhole. They think it was a hellhole until yesterday when they got here.
And let me thank Suzanne for the call. We're talking to David Kippen, and again, he's done a book on Los Angeles. It's a collection from diaries and from letters all about people writing about Los Angeles. And there's so many tidbits in here that I can't give it enough of an emphasis upon that for people who are just interested in finding out info. Like, where else could you find out that Richard Burton had found sobriety, killed his sex life or his sex drive, or that Thomas Mann had done the writing of Dr. Faustus in Los Angeles? I mean, I had never even imagined that.
Absolutely he did. But that was based in part on the life of Schoenberg, and Schoenberg was on the UCLA faculty at the time.
Here's Mo, who says, Shaws of Sunset, notwithstanding, L.A. is most responsible for preserving the culture of the Iranian diaspora.
Mm.
And here's a listener who sent in this quote attributed to Herb Cain. Isn't it great that people who prefer L.A. to San Francisco live there? Another caller. Will, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, so I wanted to give kind of an international perspective. I'm a Chinese who is a native San Francisco. By way of Shanghai, and I lived in L.A. for a few years, and I actually look at L.A. as almost like six cities, because it's like, where else in the world would you have two world-class first-tier cities in the same state or the same province, you know? I actually think Shanghai, Beijing has a bigger rivalry than San Francisco and L.A. I agree with the guess that San Francisco combines L.A. California in general.
I'm sorry, Will, you're breaking up here. Your call is breaking up. Let me try to get another caller. But he's got a good point. You've got two huge metropolis major cities right here in this huge state of ours.
Yeah, sister cities like Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine sometimes. But, yeah, sisters indeed.
And here's Craig. Craig, join us. Or Ann Landers and Dear Abby. Huh?
Yes.
Craig, you're on.
So I'm a West Coast guy. I was born and raised around the L.A. area, and then I went to college in San Diego, and then I moved up to Seattle for 12 years, and now I live in Sonoma for the last 18 years. But it's all about the water to me. I mean, the city, the whole West Coast is so different, and it's all so great. But at the end of the day, there's not enough water in Southern California. It just is, you know, the Northwest is too wet. L.A. is too dry. The Bay Area is just primo. It's kind of like the old story about the porridge is too hot and the porridge is too cold.
Yeah, it's kind of also like a story, like a movie called Chinatown. I mean, when we think about L.A. and the rivalry with San Francisco, it does often get down to water.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what's the old line in California? Whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over.
David, good luck with this book. Congratulations on it. And you can meet David Kippen this evening. He'll be at Book Passage here in San Francisco at 6 p.m. And delighted to have you here. Thank you.
Michael, I've crisscrossed the country, and you are the gold standard. You even talk to fiction writers, which hardly any other public affairs hosts do.
Not as much as we used to, unfortunately, with Donald Trump in office. But thank you for those kind words. And we are here with you Monday through Friday from 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. We're going to have Fritz DeWall on with us tomorrow, and we're also going to have Russ Dutt, the New York Times columnist. So it's all up ahead. Stay tuned, and stay tuned to KQED. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.